HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Professor Niall Moyna, full professor of clinical exercise physiology in the School of Health and Human Performance at DCU. He's a long-standing partnership with our sponsors, Irish Life Health, advising on workplace wellbeing programs. And today he's here to talk to us about the importance of exercise and health opportunities in the workplace. Niall, you're very welcome. How are you?
Good afternoon, Declan. Lovely to be here.
Great to have you here. Before we get going, there's a lot of terms used when describing health and well-being in and for the workplace. How would you define that for listeners?
Well, first of all, I think that's a great start. You know, I think you have to know, you know, you have to have a definition. We tend to throw out these terms, health and wellness and fitness, and it means different things to different people. So I think having a uniform definition, and you know, particularly if you're running it in a company, it's very, very important that employees are very aware of what you mean when we say health. So let's start with health, and then we'll move on to wellness. So basically, according to the World Health Organization, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely an absence of disease. I think that's the, so that's, it's a broad construct. And there's an old saying that, you know, we really don't value our health until sickness comes. You know, that's, you know, we just take it for granted. So that's health. If we then look at wellness, and very importantly, the first word I'm going to use is important. It's the active pursuit of activities, choices, and lifestyles that leads to a state of holistic health. So if I can just expand on that, basically wellness is not a passive or static state. It's an active pursuit, and it's associated with a person's intentions, choices, and actions as they work towards optimal health. And secondly, wellness is a holistic term. Most people, when they think of health, they think of just physical health, whereas wellness is a much broader church. You think about social, in addition to physical, financial health, emotional health, social health. It's all of those. And when I talk about it, think about a thread, and all of these different components of wellness are sort of, they're enmeshed into a single thread, and you shouldn't be able to identify one from the other if you're in total holistic wellness.
And you said it was a good start. I mean, obviously a lot of our listeners are HR managers, they're senior leaders. Why is it important that they're aware of that terminology and the impact it might have on any program they might run?
Well, I think you have to know the construct of what you're working with. And certainly health means different things. In fact, in most of the developed world, if you give Ireland, we spend most of our money treating diseases, chronic diseases, rather than looking after, making sure we stay in a state of optimal health. And this whole notion about being a state of physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely an absence of disease, it's to get this disease idea out of it. And it's more of a holistic health. So if people know that, because people in different companies, they're in different stages of their life. Some people could be in great physical health. They're not sleeping well. They're smoking. They're drinking too much wine at night. So it depends on what component you're actually looking at. And I think that World Health definition and the definition of wellness, it sets up a much broader construct than just people think health. Well, I have to be fit and I should not have a disease. But, and COVID showed this, and we'll probably get into this later, the importance of social interactions and the impact that has on our health, particularly as we get older. So if we don't have the social interactions and we're physically fit and we're smoking and we look after the other things, that one component of our overall wellness can have a deleterious effect on our overall health.
And before we get into the workplace, in terms of overall trends in wellness and well-being and fitness in Ireland, what are your observations?
Well, I suppose, again, definitions are important here. And when you mention the word fitness, for 75% of people, they switch off because they're going to think fitness, oh, that's sport, that's not me. So we have to be very, very careful again with definitions. So I'm going to describe two things because we're going to be promoting physical activity later on. But physical activity is basically any body movement produced by your muscles above rest. So if you are not sitting and you're not lying, you're physically active, even standing. As long as you're not sitting and lying, you're physically active. And that's a very, very important that we understand that. Whereas exercise is discretionary, voluntary, structured physical activity. So, for example, if you're walking up and down the stairs at work or you go to the fax machine, you've been physically active. But at lunchtime, you decide, I'm going to go out for a walk at lunchtime. I'm purposely going to go to a walk, or I'm going to go to the gym and lift a few weights. Well, that's discretionary, voluntary physical activity. And we do that consciously to maintain or improve our overall health. So those two things are slightly different, in that physical activity is any body movement that does include exercise. But in exercise, it's discretionary. So in the workplace, any movement is important. And in fact, the first study that showed this was actually published in 1953. A London physician called Jeremy Morris, he took, in the old days, there used to be a bus driver who drove the bus all day. And there was a bus conductor who then walked up and down the stairs taking the fares. And what he did was he compared the incidence of heart disease, cardiovascular disease, between the bus driver and the bus conductor. And lo and behold, in 1953, he found that the bus conductors had 50% lower incidence of cardiovascular disease compared to the bus conductors. And they also, when they got heart disease, they got it 10 years later. So that was the really wake-up call. We're basically saying, you don't have to be out, this thing we called exercise plan structured activity. Ambulating up and down the stairs all day in your workplace is enough activity to actually have a tremendously positive impact on your overall health. So understanding those two definitions are important. So where are we today? Well, I think we're pretty similar to the rest of the developed world, in that our levels of physical activity have been reduced dramatically. And we have a large incidence of chronic diseases now. Most of our healthcare budget, about 80% of the Irish healthcare budget, is spent treating chronic diseases. Now, if we live long enough, we will certainly get chronic diseases. But the problem is we're developing chronic diseases now in our prepubescent and adolescent years, not in our 50s, 60s and 70s. So that's one big problem. And this is manifested. There was a paper published just before Christmas, and it's called the TILDA study. It's a longitudinal study on aging in Ireland. And what they showed in the study, that 58% of Irish people 50 years of age or older have multimorbidity. That means they have two or more chronic diseases. And again, to show how we treat that normally with pharmacotherapy. So a paper published a few years ago in 2018, but it was based on 2013 data. And that's data now 10 years ago. And what that data showed, that 64% of Irish people 45 years of age or older were on polypharmacy. That is, they were in receipt of at least five or more medications for a month. So that's where we are right now. And you could go to any country in the developed world and you would find similar statistics. So it's not good.
And what's influencing those trends, especially in terms of workplace and how people work? What are the big influences there?
Well, you know, this started actually back in the 1700s with the Industrial Revolution. That was the start of this. So the Industrial Revolution totally changed our work practice from being very agrarian, out working in the fields, hard labor. The industrialization, we were moved into factories. And then we moved from the Industrial Revolution then to this century, the end of the last century, this technological revolution that further reduced the amount of activity. And now we're in the midst of a digital revolution, and that's further reducing activity, particularly in younger individuals. So all of those impacts over the last 200 years have dramatically reduced our incidence of our certainly our physical activity, and obviously that our nutrition has changed dramatically as well. We don't sleep as much as we used to do. We're more chronic stress than we had. So all of these lifestyle risk factors now are manifesting in these chronic diseases that are afflicting the vast majority of the Irish population.
And how do you see it manifest in the workplace now?
Well, obviously, the people who work in the workplace are a representative sample of people who live in society. So if you take those numbers, it means that a large majority of people in the workplace are at risk because of their sedentary lifestyle, their poor diet, whether they're taking recreational drugs or there's tobacco or alcohol, they're at increased risk for developing these chronic conditions. And with that, obviously, there's the chronic stress that people are under, the lack of sleep, and all of this can have a negative impact on their work and the quality of their work. And the increase in absenteeism and all those other things that are associated with chronic diseases. And, a great example of a chronic disease would be type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes because we got it in our 50s and 60s. We now see it in kids as young as 8 and 9 in Ireland. So therefore, people are developing type 2 diabetes at a much earlier age. And there's probably about 12 organ systems in your body that are negatively impacted. So you're going to be in polypharmacy. Those people are going to work, you know, they're in the workforce, and that's going to have a negative impact on their work, their interaction with other their colleagues, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it is a big issue and it certainly is an issue that has to be addressed both inside the workplace and outside the workplace.
Okay, so you've mentioned the impact to people going to work and what it's like in the workplace. Lots of organizations have well-being agendas. They have healthy lifestyles. You know, I think there was a period there for a long time where meditation was the answer to absolutely everything or that style of intervention. What are the practical things organizations can do to really support their employees' physical well-being and help them improve? And obviously there's an impact to the working environment and work?
Yeah, great question. I would use one word, culture. When you walk in to an office or a building, or there should be a general perception that if you are employed by a company, that perception should be is they value my health. They value my wellness. And that should be a culture for a lot of companies. Yeah, it's important. But is it really the most important thing? Is it just a tick box exercise to say, OK, we're going to put on these programs and we have done due diligence and we have provided them, et cetera, et cetera. I think the culture has to be there. And I'm not talking about resources or infrastructure. You don't necessarily have to have resources. Many companies just simply could not afford to have a gym and all the resources that go with it. But there's other things you can do in your company, you know, to show that both you are aware of the importance of an employee's both physical and mental well-being. And I think that should be front and forward in every facet of the company, that it's always there. And, you know, obviously there are times when we have to put our shoulder to the wheel and really work hard, but they're aware, you know, obviously the on 24/7 now working at home, all of these things, the companies actually take the time and just say, how is this affecting your life? What can we do? And it's amazing, you know, we'll probably get into this more, you know, with the hybrid working model, it's providing greater opportunities to afford individuals because the time that they're commuting to work, you know, is no longer there. And that can be, companies can really empower them and encourage them to use that time. But if the company does it, it means so much more. And I just know myself that if you're valued and you feel you're valued, I think you'll give much more back.
How can an organization get that across to their employees and convey that healthy culture, if you like? What are the practical steps they could do?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think you have to engage the workforce. It cannot be a top-down approach. You know, here's the manual, here's how you do it. I think that happens in too many companies. I think you have to engage the employees. Now, different companies, large companies, small companies, medium companies, they're all going to have a different way of doing this. But I think engaging the employees. Now, what normally happens when you engage the employees, who shows up for these meetings? The worried well. The guy with the three bicycles, you know, he goes to the gym five times a week. The people who are not going to benefit, actually, you know, and they feel great that everyone gives them a clap in the back and they tell them they're wonderful. That's not the person I'm talking about. Yes, we want their input. And they can be brilliant, actually, in assisting other employees. I want Mary and John, who are in a really bad place, really concerned about their health, a young family, spending lots of hours commuting, financial troubles. And they're saying, God, you know, I would love to start looking after my health, but where do I even start? That's the person who we need to engage. And it can be engaged. We can bring in external agencies to facilitate this, to figure out well. And it could be that Mary just wants, you know, if I got 2 10-minute breaks during the day, that would just transform me, you know. But we have to get that message. There has to be interaction between our employees and senior management to be able to facilitate that. And look, obviously, if you're going to change lifestyle, you're going to change someone's health. There's two elements here. There's the individual. The individual has to be motivated and they've got to set their own goals, you know. And there could be an individual who's thinking, I'm not interested, but there could be, and in many companies, I would say there are a lot of individuals who we say are contemplators. They're aware that they have problems in relation to their health, but we want to get them on to the next stage, which how do I prepare to start changing my lifestyle. And so rather than any intervention, walking or smoking cessation program, we're going to assist them in just going from, I'm contemplating actually changing my health to, no, I intend to take action on that. How am I going to do it? And then once I do that, then how can I actually, how is that actionable within a company? And that will vary within companies. So that's at an individual level. How can we facilitate the individual to engage in a program, get them motivated, set goals, etc.? Then you have the companies. And for, you know, obviously in most cases, we're trying to get individuals to change their behavior. That's what you're trying to actually do. It's behavioral change. That's what these workplace programs are, wellness programs are. And look, there are lots of structured behavioral change interventions. Like there's telephone counseling, there's, you can have group sessions, you can provide written information, or you could even have educational settings, people coming in and giving talks to your companies. And all of these are used. But the problem with these is that they are resource intensive. They're time consuming. And research shows that they really, they limit long-term adherence to these behavioral changes. And for most companies, they're simply not feasible. But, you know, in the modern world where we work in now, you know, there are so many personalized health and well-being apps. And to be able to access this, and there's a lot of artificial intelligence associated with these apps, and many of these apps can be used in conjunction with programs that are run by the companies to facilitate behavioral change. Because at the end of the day, we want long-term change. You know, this just should not be a short-term change. We want people to change their behavior that's going to affect them in the long term, both their physical and their mental health. And look, I've worked with Irish Life Health for a number of years, and I've developed a few apps. And one of the apps that we developed was the Irish Life My Life app. And this is a personalized health app, and it shows great promise basically in facilitating these behavioral changes that we're looking to affect when we run these workplace wellness programs.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
How do you impact someone who isn't aware they need to be impacted? So you mentioned earlier some of the sort of the key indicators, you know, the sedentary lifestyle, the chronic stress. How do you get to those people who possibly don't even know they need to be got to?
Well, oddly enough, I'd say the vast majority know they need to be got to. They know it.
I'd agree, yeah.
But, you know, Declan, if you're, you know, you're slightly overweight, the dress doesn't fit as well, and all of a sudden you go into one of these workout classes at noon, I mean, you feel that everyone is looking at you. In fact, no one is looking at you. They're too busy getting on with their own life. But that's, you know, for these people, that's a real issue. Or if I'm walking up the stairs and I'm out of breath and people see me out of breath, if I'm with colleagues, therefore I not take the stairs, you know, I will take the elevator instead because I don't want to see people see that I'm unfit. Again, it comes back to, I talked earlier on about the worried well. I think the worried well in a workplace can really play a big role rather than taking in external people. If a colleague of yours, if you have a colleague who you know has really good lifestyle, good diet, you know, good sleeping, relatively low stress, they're physically active, it's that individual could have a much greater impact on the other employee than any external agency that we bring in. So I think that's getting people who are already in the company. Now, if they don't exist, I think we have to be innovative as to find other ways. But one of the ways we can do it is get those people, have a group meeting, have a facilitated group meeting, and bring in those individuals who are not engaging in your wellness program and ask them, what small changes can the company make to empower you to be able to engage in our program? So you're taking the first step. You're not, you know, this is not, you're not going to go to the Olympic Games anytime soon, but this is a first step that can be transformative for both your physical and your mental health and your social interactions and your overall health and wellness.
In terms of other first steps for organizations, I mean, obviously organizations, some are just starting worrying about the physical well-being of their employees. Where should they, what should their first steps be?
I think first of all is to engage your employees and get a general idea of their interest, number one, in your program. You know, do they want a best in the workplace, or do they want to be able to do it at lunchtime, or do they want to do it at home? You know, or it could be a combination of all of those. So I think that's the first thing that a company has to do. Then the second thing is, how can the company facilitate it at low cost? You know, there's small little things a company could do. It could be 2 10-minute times during the day that you know, that employees are allowed to go out for a walk, or it could be standing up meetings rather than sitting meetings, and it becomes the norm. So if you're standing up, people are not going to look at you as if to say, well, that guy is weird. You know, that is, it's accepted that you can stand up for a meeting, or as part of a meeting, you can just get up and stand up and walk around the room. These are small changes. And those changes affect other changes, because people see, well, the company is making a genuine effort here to try to facilitate, whether it's promoting, I'm just giving an example, or promoting physical activity. But it could be putting on a meditation class for mental well-being, you know, and again, a very short class that's going to have a specific impact. Now, I think one of the things that I should mention, and obviously I'm a big promoter of physical activity as one of the components of wellness. It's obviously, it's only one of the components. But one of the things that people underappreciate is that there are two benefits to exercise or physical activity. One is called the acute effect. And the acute effect of doing a 5-minute bout of physical activity, that refers to these acute transient responses to an isolated bout. So if I go at lunchtime and I go out for a 10-minute walk, because of that 10-minute walk, I'm going to get a transient decrease in my blood pressure. I'm going to get a transient decrease in the amount of fat in my blood. My insulin sensitivity is going to improve. My mood is going to improve. I'm going to have, when I go back to work, I'm going to have better attention. I'm going to be better able to process, store, and retrieve information just from that 10-minute bout. So that's the acute effect. And people underappreciate that benefit. The benefit is huge. They think, I've got to go out and I've got to do this on a regular basis to get health benefits. No, you get acute responses for anywhere from 6 to 18 hours after going for a 10 to 15 minute walk. And by the way, a simple walk affects every single organ system in your body in a positive way. It turns on thousands of genes, that 10 minute walk. In contrast, when you're sitting, they turn on thousands of genes, but these are deleterious genes that affect that have a negative impact on our health. Now, if we look at chronic, if we do that acute bout of exercise, we go for that 10-minute walk every day, we get permanent adaptations. Our heart is much better. It's much better at functioning. Our muscles get stronger. We feel better. They're permanent responses. So don't people underestimate the benefit of going of the acute response. And maybe they can say, oh, I can only do it twice a week. Believe you me, doing it twice a week and doing it 50 weeks of the year, you will get incalculable health benefits from that 2 10-minute bouts over the course of a week. It's the doing nothing. It's the sedentary lifestyle. And because of that, people who are sedentary tend to have poorer diets, tend to be higher levels of chronic stress, tend to have other poor health behaviors, such as addictive drug behavior, alcohol consumption. So any form of activity, I think, will help us promote good health habits. And also we get those transient health benefits. So don't underestimate walking up a flight of stairs.
That's incredible. I mean, you talk about a personal return on investment there of your 10 minutes. It's incredible. It really is. You touched on hybrid working earlier. I think a lot of us are in a situation now where we have a little bit more flexibility around our working day, with probably less stringent 9 to 5. What advice would you give to people who might be starting out on their fitness journey or want to improve their fitness? Maybe they're working full time, but maybe there's some hybrid thrown in there. Maybe they're juggling family responsibilities or home responsibilities as well. What would your general advice to them be?
Well, I think the hybrid's a game changer. No doubt about it. I just see opportunity, you know. And I think the employers are going to be the benefit of this if they really engage their employees in wellness. Because the hybrid model, like when you think of people commuting 2-3 hours every day to work, and 2 or 3 days a week, they don't have to do that. What companies should be doing is saying, look, we realize now this time freed up for you. We want to facilitate that you can use some of that free time for your health and well-being, instead of putting on an extra meeting and a third extra meeting and a fourth extra meeting, because you will reap the rewards tenfold. So, and I think there are people, the worried web, we don't worry about them. But for people then who are starting out, we've got to give them little nuggets of information that are important for them. Now, I don't want to be overly prescriptive here, because what happens is we turn something as simple as going out for a walk into rocket science. Oh, you got to work at this heart rate and your breathing is... That's nonsense. If you're not sitting and you're not lying, remember, you're physically active. And any type of physical activity will result in significant physical and mental health benefits. So what I would say to individuals who are starting off, set clear goals. Set specific times that you're going to say, these are my health times. This is my time. And I'm doing this. And I wouldn't set unrealistic goals. For example, if you're inactive and you're not engaged really in any physical activity at the moment, don't set, I'm going to walk 10,000 steps a day. It's nonsense. Because the problem with that is if you don't get 10,000, you think, oh, it's just a waste of time. Instead of, if you did 3,000 every day and you did it every day, that would be absolutely fantastic. Set realistic goals that you can attain. I would set a goal from a step perspective of at least 5,000 steps a day. That's what would be my starting off point. And anything above that, that's gravy. That's dessert. That's brilliant. You're getting those extra. And the closer you get to 10,000, that would be great. But 10,000 is not a magic number. There's lots of studies now that showing that 7,000 steps, you get the same benefits as 10,000 steps. It's the steps. It's the moving. The other thing I would say to people as well, and again, I'd like to see more HR people providing this information to their employees in relation to, as we get older, because the current guidelines is that we get 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity on a daily basis. That's 30 minutes of walking. Okay, that looks after our cardiovascular system. The other component that is extremely important is our muscle mass, to be able to maintain muscle mass. That's very, very important. So simple home-based body weight exercises to maintain our upper and lower body mass is very, very important, particularly as we age. And if we improve our muscle mass, that's probably also going to improve our balance. And our balance is also very important, because as we age, our balance disimproves, and that increases our risk for falls. So combining some form of resistance, and it could be when you're making a cup of tea, you just put your hands on the table and you do 5 push-ups. But to get into the habit at home on your time, on your 10 minutes or 15 minutes, this is my time twice a day or once a day. These are the times that I'm going to focus on my health. And also be realistic. You know, as I say, you didn't get to the state you're in overnight. You're not going to come out of it overnight. So set realistic goals. Say that, you know, by the end of June, middle of summer, you know, we're starting now, and by the middle of summer, I want to be able to maybe walk or run a 5K. That's a realistic target. And ideally, I'd love to do it with a colleague or with a family member. And that's a realistic target. And imagine the sense of empowerment that an individual would feel starting from nowhere to being able to walk or jog or a combination of walking and jogging a 5K within 3 months. And a very important message here, another important message that seems to be all very important, is this one. The people who get the most benefit from engaging in a wellness program are the people right now who are in the poorest health and the least active. Because they get significant gains, and I mean really large gains, by small changes to their lifestyle. If you're already physically active, you're in pretty good health, and you increase it another 10%, well, it's the law of diminishing returns. You're probably not going to get a huge improvement in your overall health. But if you're really poor health, low levels of activity, chronically stressed, poor sleep, and you make small changes to your lifestyle, the impact on your health is incalculable. And you get those improvements within 4 weeks. Within 6 weeks, you would, if you do this on a daily basis for 6 weeks, your health would be absolutely transformed, more so than any drug could actually do. I mean, that should be the drug of choice, because it impacts on every lifestyle, impacts on every single system in our body. So it's something that we need to be aware of. The people who get the most are the people right now who are the least healthy and the least active. They get most bang for their buck. And that's a very, very important message.
Is there a tipping point for most people where they start seeing the benefits and then they snowball into it continually? Or do you feel for people who really struggle to get going that they just need to break through that first bit?
Yeah, the struggling to get going is the issue. I mean, once you get going, the positive feedback, all you have to do is look at yourself in the mirror or how you actually feel, or the dress, you've gone down a dress size or a waist size, you know, that's the positive reinforcement. You know that it's actually working. The hardest part, and I've already alluded to this, is how do you put the foot, that first step forward? And for so many employees, that is the hardest part. And I can't be overly prescriptive, because there could be companies with 2,000 employees versus some company with 20, and you can't, the same methodology won't apply to both companies. You've got to figure out what works for yours. And again, it comes back to what I said, it's culture. If an employee genuinely feels that you have a genuine interest in their physical and mental health, I think there's a greater likelihood they will engage, and you will reap the rewards manyfold.
Yeah, it's such an area that companies can have a real impact on. Niall, thank you so much for your time today. And if anyone would like to find out more about wellbeing in the workplace, you can visit Irish Life Wellbeing or Irish Life Health on LinkedIn, or email wellness@irishlife.ie. Thank you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.